Hey, Smutters.
Hey.
Hey. How's your day been?
It was pretty good. I got off work early.
I know.
And happy October Eve.
Yes, happy October Eve,
well,
y'all.
Well, I guess when they hear this, this will be October.
Yeah. So, happy October.
Yay.
I love it. So, I went this week and bought a birthday cake.
Yeah, I wanted. That's one of the things I was going to talk about.
Oh, you go for it then.
So, guys, Jen comes to me and she's like, I'm going to start eating healthier. I'm going to start my diet tomorrow. And, of course, I agree because I've heard it 37, 90 times. So, the next day, I'm at work. She texts. I just went and got a whole ice cream cake. Because I can. I'm an adult. And I was like, wow, all right. So, her diet didn't get off to a good start.
At the store, they go, is it your birthday or somebody's birthday? And I was like, no, why? And they're like, because you have a whole birthday cake in your baggie. I was like, no, I'm just going to eat this bitch when I get home.
Wow.
I was like, I just wanted one. But yes, that's how my week's gone. There I am.
Yep. Did you see that meme I sent you about the aliens? They're like, hey, we're here. And people are like, oh, I just got stuff going on.
I mean, it's true. They could have picked a better time to let us know about aliens. Not
it's a
right
distraction,
now.
Distraction, people.
Well, I think.
They're probably telling us about aliens because they discovered Bigfoot or something and they don't want to let us know. I mean, something else.
I think things are just so bad and they're like, you know what? Perfect time to tell them about aliens.
Yeah.
Because nobody's going to care right now. So.
And plus our government looms to shut down, I think, tonight, unless they reach an agreement.
Or what?
Our government.
It shut down?
It may shut down tonight if they don't come to an agreement on a budget.
Does that mean free ice cream cake for everybody?
No.
Oh, okay.
But other than that, how's your week?
It's actually been okay.
Mine too. I actually got some help at work, so I've actually had a day off, and I didn't have to work 12 hours every day.
Yeah, like it hasn't been super terrible, and that is a win for me.
Sounds like you're tired, though.
We just ate a lot of food.
Oh, God. Yeah, I was like, Jen, I really want something fresh tonight. Yeah. I'm like, you know, I want a really good salad.
Yeah.
And it was getting kind of late, so we're like, I look it up. I'm like, who can do salads? So we started looking around, and most, you know, small places are closing, but most major restaurants are open till 11. So I decide, she's like, well, here's this. So I pick it up, and I'm looking at it. So I go to the salad. But then, right beside it, as I'm scrolling, I see the steaks.
Yes.
And so I was like, you know what? Steak, loaded baked potato, salad, and extra rolls. That's what I got. That's what was my fresh meal tonight.
You know what they forgot to put in, though? The salad. So then, like, Troy goes, you know what? I'm going to get a steak. And I was like, oh, so we don't have to get salad? I got the biggest bowl of pasta and rolls they had. So
we're so full and fattening right now.
I hate myself right now. And we'll probably, I guarantee you, not probably, it's a guarantee, we'll eat some ice cream cake before we go to bed.
Oh, no, because after this, I'm probably passing out from the food coma. The food coma is coming.
Well, so last week, our story.
Hold on. What? There's one other thing I got to mention.
What?
So the cops was called on Britney Spears for a wellness check because I don't know if you guys have seen her most recent video, but she is dancing with knives. Now, she came out and said, guys, I'm okay. These are props or whatever. But I heard those knives clang, and they didn't sound like props to me.
You know what, though? She clanged those knives on beat. I have to give that to her. I was like, because when she did it, I was like, that's, here we go. And but when she did it, it was like, ching, ching. And
yeah,
I was like,
poor dogs.
Those dogs were terrified.
They took off.
Yes, they know what's coming. They ran. But, I mean, y'all, I wouldn't be making fun, but I know that. I know in my heart that is not Britney Spears. That is a clone or a lookalike or something. That is not our Britney. Because I've always been on Team Britney. Even when she shaved her head, I was like, get it, girl. But now, it's too much. I can't handle the dancing and the little outfits. And it's just bad. And now she's bringing some knives in it, like trying to ching ching and make it look cool and stuff. It's not Britney.
And she, well, she's like, you know, this is a dedication or something to like Shakira. But I don't remember Shakira doing that.
No, Shakira, she dances with her hips. You
know, I
know,
but I don't remember any knives.
Yeah, I've never seen. I mean, and we're, you know, we don't like watch Shakira or anything. Maybe she did dance with knives, but I don't even think she was dancing to a Shakira song, was she?
I don't think so.
No, it was something totally different. And but I love the memes though, where
yeah, they're
there's
coming
so
out.
Many.
Yeah, like her working in a Japanese restaurant.
Yes,
where she's everything up
like can pie. But yeah,
can pie. Oh my God, I've been trying to remember that name forever.
Really?
That was that one restaurant that I loved.
Yeah,
I can't. I had forgotten the name of it.
Oh.
Oh my God.
I think
wow,
they closed it, didn't they?
Yeah, they closed it.
Yeah. But yes, so.
Anywho.
That is just.
That's our current events.
Yes,
for the week.
Do not get me started on that, because that is not Britney, and that is a. That's just a hot mess, is what it is, I think.
Yep.
Anyway, so. Like I was saying, last week's story, I hated it. I hated it so much. I thought it was terrible, and I was not feeling it or into it. So I thought, you know what? We've got to bring it this week.
Okay. It's already been brought.
It's already been brought. This week.
Go Toros.
I said that at work the other day, and one of the girls did the Toro cheer, and I was like, oh my God. Like, she like started doing the whole moves and everything, and I was like, oh my God, you're amazing.
Oh, one other thing. A person that is America's national treasure right now, Livy Dunn, it's her birthday.
Happy birthday, Livy Dunn.
If you hear this, please just mention us.
Yes.
Her birthday outfit.
She's gorgeous. Like,
she is gorgeous.
She could wear sweatpants
but
and
the biggest
whatever,
thing about
she's
Livy,
gorgeous.
Though, is she's just, you don't see any, like, there's all kind of rumors and stuff, but you don't see any scandalous stuff coming from her.
No, like, all her TikTok stuff is super cute. Like, it's not hateful. It's nothing. It's not to hurt anybody. It's just her being a kid and having fun,
yep.
You know? And she's so daggum adorable.
And she got on Forbes list just now.
And she's in Sports Illustrated. Yeah, so
she's
good for her. Like,
yeah.
She's doing things for herself. So I say do it, girl. But yes, speaking of powerful women, my segue into the story. We're talking about Lizzie Borden tonight.
Okay, well, okay. We're talking about Lizzie Borden tonight, but guys, we need your help. All right, whether you want to send us a Facebook message, comment on YouTube, Instagram message, however, please let us know. Instead of having baby fever, which will never happen,
God no,
Jen is having puppy fever.
Yes,
but we've both agreed that, you know, we're getting a small dog.
Yes.
You know, we've always loved the Brussels, of course, but because of Brantley Bales. But she is also leaning towards, like, a Yorkie. And I'm wanting a Frenchie.
God, no.
And shush, I'm talking.
Sorry.
And I'm wanting a Frenchie. Then she says, oh, well, what about a pug? And then so it's back and forth on all these little small dogs. So we need your recommendations. What do you think? Which one should we get?
Like, literally, if he walked in with a little puppy, I'd be happy. But y'all, I don't want a Frenchie. They make the weirdest fucking noises I've ever heard in my life. Like, y'all, seriously, I don't know if y'all are like us. We follow everything puppies and dogs on Instagram, and there's a lot of Frenchies on there, and they're so cute, but I could not do it because, like, they're like, bah! And it's so weird. They don't even bark. They're just like, bah!
It's like a miniature Riggins.
We don't want another one of those. Riggins, I love that dog, but he's a boxer, y'all. And he's
solid white. He's like
so crazy. He's made a guest appearance on the show from making all of his noises. Y'all, I can never get another boxer. I love them so much, but he is a gigantic mess, is what he is.
But let us know what you guys think. What should we get?
And do not hate on me for saying I could not get another boxer, because I love boxers. They are crazy. They are silly. They are so funny. But I could never replace our Riggins.
No, he's unreplaceable.
He is.
Oh, wait a minute. Irreplaceable. Not unreplaceable.
New word, though. TM. There you go. Yes, we are doing Lizzie Borden tonight. So what we're going to do is we're going to go over Lizzie Borden's life. We're going to go over the murder, the trial, and we're going to talk about how the Lizzie Borden house is haunted today.
Oh, is she haunting that bitch?
I don't know if it's her.
That's weird.
Yeah, it's not necessarily her that's haunting it. So,
what's it? Weird billboard, huh?
Yeah. So let's go ahead and dive on in, because it's going to be a pretty long episode. Are you ready?
I guess so.
Okay. So as I said, tonight we're talking about Lizzie Borden. This murder case is one of the most famous in American criminal history. This horrible murder was immortalized by a simple children's rhyme passed down through the generations. Have you heard the rhyme?
No.
Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave her mother 40 whacks. When she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41.
41 what? Stabs?
Yeah. Tonight, we're going to go over all the murders that took place. Well, all two of them. And then we will go over the hauntings that take place today. So, Lizzie Andrew Borden was born on July 19th of 1860. She was born in Fall River, Massachusetts, which I feel like Massachusetts is like my home. We must go to Massachusetts. Okay? Okay?
Yep.
Okay. Now, going by the nursery rhyme, many people believe that she gave her mother the 40 whacks. It was actually her stepmother, Abby Borden. Her real mother was named Sarah. Her father was Andrew Jackson Borden, and she had an older sister named Emma Lenora Borden. I love that name, Lenora. When Lizzie was 2 years old, her mom passed away, but before she did, Emma was 12. Her mother asked Emma to watch over Lizzie, since she wouldn't be there to do it. So Emma gave her word that she's going to watch over Lizzie and make sure she's good and okay. After a few years passed, Andrew remarried to Abby Durfee Gray. Miss Abby. The pages are sticking together.
Wow.
Lizzie was 32 when the murders happened, so in Fall River, everyone knew the Bordens. They were pretty well off. Andrew was a real estate developer. He was a coffin manufacturer and an investor.
Wait, you say coffin or coffee?
Coffin. Oh. Like he made coffins. He was really just a great businessman. He was also a part of the founding families of Fall River. It was known that Andrew was a very cheap man. He was worth a lot of money, about $9 or $10 million in today's terms, because of how he was. The family also had a 26-year-old Irish maid named Bridget Sullivan. She had worked for the family for about 3 years. Lizzie and Emma were assholes.
Oh. I was about to say, I didn't write in your book this time.
No, this just makes me laugh. The maid Bridget Lizzie and Emma decided that they didn't need to learn her name, so they just called her Maggie because that was their previous maid's name. So, like, I watched a movie over all this, and, like, they'd call her Maggie, and she'd just have to go with it because there was no correcting these girls. They did not give a shit. They were like, you know what? We know your name's Bridget, but it's Maggie now. So, that was it. But I thought that was kind of funny because that's just a dick thing to do. The family lived in a very nice house. And as I said, Andrew was a cheap man, so they didn't have electricity or running water. Now, during this time period, people did have electricity and running water, and it was becoming a thing by that time. Obviously, this pissed off Lizzie and Emma. They were loaded, and he refused to spend any of it. The girls dreamed of living on the hill. Now, the hill is where the upper class neighborhood was. They wanted to go to the fancy parties and the big houses, but not Andrew. He made them live downtown so he could be pretty much walking distance to all of his businesses that he owned. The girls and their stepmother's relationship, it started out okay. They even called her mother for a while. But then the girls started to get concerned. They were concerned that Abby was only with their father for his money. That if something happened to their father, she was next in line to inherit everything, not Lizzie or Emma. They thought this because Abby's half-sister was down on her luck. So Andrew gave her one of their rental properties, which made Lizzie and Emma irate. They were pissed. Seeing as though he would not spend the money for electricity or water, but yet he's going to give away one of his rental properties to her stepsister, I'd be kind of mad too, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So they went to their father and basically told him, since you gave this lady rental property, then we expect a rental property as well, but it better be a good one because we're your daughters, which I get it. The girls got their property, but as soon as they did, they found out it wasn't what they expected. They had to, you know, they got their rent money and stuff like that, but with that money that they got, they had to turn around and pay for repairs and property damages and stuff like that. So they found out that it just was not for them. So what they did was they sold it back to their dad for $5,000, which is $163,000 now, and it was about 3 times more than what it was worth that they sold it to him for. So they still got a good deal, but if I were their dad, I would have been like, no, I'm not buying that. Just give it to me, you know?
Right.
But anyway, after all of this went down and the whole rental property happened, they started to hate Abby. They wanted nothing to do with her. They were rude to her. They even started to call her Mrs. Borden instead of Mom. So anytime, like, they'd go talk to her, they'd be like, Mrs. Borden, I need this, you know? It wasn't Mom, you know? So, and in the movie, it's funny because they do show a part like that, and I thought, I kind of started laughing when I saw it because Lizzie was like, yes, Mrs. Borden, and just kind of gave her a look, you know? I'm not saying it was cute by any means, but I thought it was funny. So in the time period that they grew up in, the girls were basically spinsters. They had given up on finding a husband, and Lizzie, however, had a very active social life. She taught Sunday school. She cooked dinners for the church. She was also active in the Ladies Fruit and Flower Mission, and she volunteered at the hospital. Obviously, Lizzie wanted to get married, but there were whispers that she may have been a lesbian. That's what people said, since she wasn't married at 32, which that is super rude. So they also, in some of the movies, they kind of like hint to the fact that she was. They hint that her and Maggie, their maid, had something going on. Honestly, and it doesn't really matter, but I feel like that's just an ugly thing to say. Like, they're not married, so obviously they're lesbians, you know?
Right.
Like, I hate that. So, whether she was or wasn't was never known. But, you know, it doesn't really matter either. So, where was I? Honestly, I think that Lizzie was too involved with herself. And she wasn't ready for a certain man or woman in her life. Like, she was all about Lizzie. So, back to Andrew. He was not well-liked around the town. He wasn't very friendly. And I got to thinking about how he was with, like, his money and, you know, all that. So, it kind of started to remind me of Ebenezer Scrooge from The Christmas Carol. You know how everybody was just kind of, like, scared of him and stuff like that, and he was just a rude person?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's kind of like what Andrew reminded me of. He's just kind of a dick. So, on August 2nd, 1892, 2 days before the murder, the whole family got sick. Except for Lizzie and Emma. They were out of town. Abby and Andrew were scared they had gotten poisoned. It was said they thought the milk they had delivered every morning was poison. Abby ended up going to the doctor about it. And it turns out, since Andrew didn't like to spend that much money, the food they had would go bad, and he would make them eat it all before they got more food. So, it was actually old sheep meat that was left on the stove to use in meals over several days that made them sick. The next day, August 3rd, Lizzie went to visit Alice Russell. She was a good friend of Emma's. During Alice's testimony in the trial, she said Lizzie told her she felt something bad was going to happen to the family. She said there were burglary attempts on the home and said, quote, "I feel as if something was hanging over me that I cannot throw off. Father has so much trouble and I am afraid somebody will do something." Now, here's the thing. If you are planning a murder, do not go to people and be like, "I think something bad's about to happen to these people." You know it? Just don't do it. Because obviously it just makes you look guilty. It's now Thursday morning, August 4th. The girl's Uncle John showed up to have a business meeting with Andrew. He had actually stayed in the guest bedroom the previous night. And their Uncle John was their biological mother's brother. So they loved him. He showed up every now and then. He actually showed up without any luggage or anything, just out of nowhere, and stayed the night and then left that morning. He had breakfast with the family and went to go visit more relatives. Lizzie was sleeping in. She ended up downstairs around 9 a.m. Andrew went for his morning walk around the same time. Emma was in Fairhaven. She was doing like dress fittings and hanging out with some friends there, which is about 15 miles from Fall River. Bridget, also known as Maggie, was sent outside by Lizzie to wash the windows. And while she was out there washing windows, she chatted with the neighbor's maid for a bit too. So, Abby went upstairs. She was going to go to the guest bedroom and she was going to start making the bed and cleaning up in there. And Lizzie was in the dining room ironing handkerchiefs. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's what she did back then. Abby was murdered in the room right above Lizzie. Lizzie says she never heard a sound. Now, they have done tests on this. Somebody standing, you know, where Lizzie would have been. And the room is right above Lizzie's head, okay? So, they dropped something that was about the same size as Abby, and it shook the whole entire house. So, there's no way that she would not have known what was going on. Andrew then comes back. Bridget testified she started cleaning the inside windows when she had to let Andrew in because all the doors had been locked from the inside. Bridget also said that when she came in, she heard Lizzie standing at the top of the stairs laughing. Abby was already dead at this point. Her body was laying on the floor. The guest room is at the top of the stairs, meaning you can't miss Abby's body. So, if Lizzie was on the stairs and she didn't do it, she definitely saw her laying there is what I'm getting at. And for her to start laughing, that's just scary. So, when Lizzie got downstairs, Andrew asked where Abby was. Lizzie told him she got a letter from a sick friend and went to go visit them. No note was ever found, and there was not a sick friend. So Andrew decided to lay down on the couch and take a quick nap before he decided to, you know, before he had to go into town and check on everything. Bridget finished the windows and didn't feel well, so she went to her room. Her room was in the attic. They just made a room out of the attic, and that was hers. So she went to her room to rest. As soon as Bridget laid her head on the pillow, she hears Lizzie yell, "Come down here quick. Somebody came in and killed him." Lizzie sent Bridget to get help. Andrew was slumped on the couch, and they actually had two doctors that lived near them. One was an Irish doctor and one was a French doctor. Well, Lizzie said not to go to them because she did not want to have an Irish or French doctor working. That's just how it was back then. A lot of hatred going on back then. So she had to go get another doctor. And it turns out he had been struck multiple times in the face. I think it was 11 to be exact, with a hatchet. Yeah. His eye was cut in two, and one of his eyes were hanging out of his face.
I'm sure.
His whole face was caved in. Now, I was going to post the autopsy pictures. I feel like it's a little much to post to Facebook and Instagram. So you
could post a link that takes people to
Well, it. All you have to do is look up, you know, Lizzie Borden autopsy pictures, and it shows the pictures of the stepmom and the dad. It shows the stepmom, it doesn't show her face or anything. It shows that she is laying on her stomach, and you can see like the back of her feet and everything, and that's about it. So, as I just said, Abby's face was, she was face down on the floor. The first hit was on the front of the head, and the rest were all in the back, meaning she saw who did this. Lizzie was calm the whole time. She did not cry once. The police even said it was very bothersome how collected and stone cold she was. As a matter of fact, many people noticed how Lizzie didn't show many signs of mourning at all. 32 hours after the murder, they searched the Borden's house. 32 hours. Okay? That's over a day for them to be like, you know what we haven't done? We haven't searched the house where they were killed. So, they finally decided to search the house. The sisters were questioned 3 days later. Lizzie changed her story a lot. And here's the thing. If you commit a crime, stick with one story.
Yeah.
So,
I get that.
Right? Like, don't change it. Lizzie's initial answers to the police officers' questions were at times strange, and they were very contradictory. Initially, she reported hearing a groan or a scraping noise or a distress call before entering the house. 2 hours later, she told the police she had heard nothing and entered the house not really realizing anything was wrong. When asked where her stepmother was, as I said, she said that Abby had gotten a note to visit a sick friend, but then she also stated that she thought Abby had returned and asked if someone could go upstairs and look for her. Sullivan and a neighbor, Mrs. Churchill, were halfway up the stairs, their eyes leveled to the floor when they looked into the guest room and saw Abby lying face down. So, basically, after Lizzie had said she went to check on a sick friend's house, then to check on a sick friend at their house, she told the ladies at her house to go upstairs and check on her. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Most of the officers who interviewed Lizzie reported that they disliked her attitude. Some said that she was too calm and poised. Despite her behavior and changing alibis, she was not checked for bloodstains. Police did search her room, but it was a cursory inspection. at the trial, they admitted to not doing a proper search because Lizzie wasn't feeling well. They were subsequently criticized for their lack of diligence. In the basement, police found two hatchets.
Always a basement.
I know. Two axes and a hatchet head with a broken handle. The hatchet head was suspected of being the murder weapon, as the break in the handle appeared fresh and the ash and the dust on the head, unlike on the other tools, appeared to have been deliberately applied to make it look like it had been sitting in the basement. So basically, the murder weapon, they rubbed like dirt and ash and stuff on it just to make it look like it was old and it, you know, it just wasn't used.
Or according to my parents, that would heal the wounds.
Just throw some dirt on it.
Yep, rub some dirt on it, spit on it.
However, none of the tools that they found were ever removed from the house. They left the murder weapon there. Now, because of the mysterious illness that struck the household before the murders, the family's milk and the victim's stomach, they were removed during autopsies. And the autopsies were actually performed in the Borden dining room. They were tested for poison, but no poison was ever found. They did suspect Lizzie of purchasing hydrocyanic acid in a diluted form from the local druggist. Her defense was that she inquired about the acid in order to clean her furs, but that has no antiseptic properties, so it wouldn't clean much of anything. So basically, Lizzie went to the general store and asked if she could have some poison, and they said absolutely not. And she's like, but I need it to clean my jacket. And they're like, still no. So Lizzie and Emma's friend, Alice Russell, decided to stay with the sisters the night following the murders, while Moore spent the night in the attic guest room. Police were stationed around the house on the night of August 4th. Oh, and also, Alice ended up staying in the guest room where Abby was murdered the next night. Mm-hmm. Like, were times that different back then?
I guess.
Because I would have been like, no, I will not stay in the guest room or at this house. So, anyway, the police were stationed around the house on the night of August 4th, during which an officer said he had seen Lizzie enter the cellar. She was carrying a kerosene lamp and a slop pail. He stated he saw... Oh, she was with Alice. He stated that he saw both women exit the cellar, after which Lizzie returned alone. Though he was unable to see what she was doing, he stated it appeared she was bent over the sink. On August 5th, Morse left the Borden residence and was mauled by hundreds of people. Police had to escort him back to the house. Now, the following day, the police conducted a more thorough search of the house, inspecting the sister's clothing and confiscated the broken-handled axe head. That evening, the police officer and the mayor visited the house, and Lizzie was informed that she was a suspect in the murders. The next morning, Russell entered the kitchen to find Borden tearing up a dress. She explained that she was planning to put it on fire because it was covered with paint. It was never determined whether it was the dress that she had been wearing the day of the murders. Also, I do have to say, because I don't think they mention it in here, but they found a bucket of bloody rags in the house as well. And they asked Lizzie, what is this? Like, what is this bucket of bloody rags? And she didn't even blink. She was like, I'm on my period. And of course, since it was all men, they were like, oh, that's all you had to say. And they were like, no more questions there. You know, like they did not want to talk about that. So I don't know if that was the truth, if that was, you know, maybe something she was wearing or whatever, but all she had to say, it's that time of the month. And they're like, we get it. It's fine. So there was that. Lizzie appeared at the inquest hearing on August 8th. Her request to have her family attorney present was refused under a state statute providing that an inquest must be held in private. She had been prescribed regular doses of morphine to calm her nerves. So they're saying that since she was on morphine, this affected her testimony, and that's what they went with. Her behavior was erratic, and she often refused to answer a question, even if the answer would be beneficial to her. As I said, she contradicted herself, and she provided alternating accounts of the morning in question. She said she was in the kitchen reading a magazine when her father arrived home, and then said that she was in the dining room doing some ironing, and then she said she was coming down the stairs when he got home. So her story changes constantly, but she's on morphine, so it's okay, right?
Right.
And also, I bet they used the whole period thing, too. Like, she was on her period, too, so she was crazy. You know what I mean? Back in that time, that's probably what they could have gotten away with. So, the district attorney was very aggressive and confrontational. On August 11th, Lizzie was served with a warrant of arrest, and she was put in jail. The inquest testimony, the basis for the modern debate regarding Lizzie's guilt or innocence, was later ruled inadmissible at her trial in June of 1893. Now, the newspaper articles pretty much said that Lizzie had a solid demeanor, and she bit her lips, flushed, and bent toward the attorney's Adams. It was also reported that the testimony provided in the inquest had caused a change of opinion among her friends who have heretofore strongly maintained her innocence. So now her friends are kind of like, I don't know that she is innocent. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So because she's acting just, I don't want to say crazy, but crazy. You know what I mean?
And stuff didn't add up.
Yeah, it just didn't add up. Everything was changing. The inquest received press attention nationwide, including an extensive 3-page write-up in the Boston Globe. A grand jury began hearing evidence on November 7th, and Borden was indicted on December 2nd. Let's see.
Did she ever admit it?
Never. So, Lizzie's trial took place in New Bedford starting on June 5th of 1893. 5 days before the trial's commencement on June 1st, wait, that doesn't make sense, another axe murder occurred in Fall River. So this time the victim was Bertha Manchester, who was found hacked to death in her kitchen. The similarities between the Manchester and Borden murders were striking and noted by the jurors.
Well, what if she was really innocent?
She wasn't. But however,
she didn't confess.
However,
so we know how investigations back then went.
Yeah, but she did a lot of questionable things.
Well, I mean, still, there's still no 100% proof.
Well, here's the thing. Jose Carrera de Mello, a Portuguese immigrant, was later convicted of the Manchester murder in 1894. And it was determined not to have been in the vicinity of Fall River at the time of the Borden murders. So it was not him. A prominent point of discussion in the trial was a hatchet head found in the basement, which was not convincingly demonstrated by the prosecution to be the murder weapon. Prosecutors argued that the killer had removed the handle because it would have been covered in blood. One officer testified that a hatchet handle was found near the hatchet head, but another officer contradicted this. Though no bloody clothing was found at the scene, Russell testified that on August 8th of 1892, she witnessed Lizzie burn a dress in the kitchen stove, saying it had been ruined when she brushed against wet paint.
Ruined.
Now, Lizzie did this basically before the police were going to come in. She knew what she was doing, so keep that in mind. During the course of the trial, defense never attempted to challenge the statement. Lizzie's presence at the home was also a point of dispute during the trial. According to testimony, Sullivan entered the second floor at around 10:58 a.m. and left Lizzie and her father downstairs. Lizzie told several people that at this time, she went to the barn and was not in the house for 20 minutes and maybe half an hour. Let's see. Hyman Lubinsky testified for the defense that he saw Lizzie leaving the barn at 11:03, and Charles Gardner confirmed the time. At 11:10, Lizzie called Maggie downstairs and told her Andrew had been murdered and ordered her not to enter the room. Instead, Lizzie sent her to get a doctor. Both victims' heads had been removed during the autopsy. The skulls were admitted as evidence during the trial and presented on June 5th, 1893. Upon seeing them in the courtroom, Lizzie fainted. Now, while I was going over this, Lizzie knew how to play everybody. She did a lot of feigning. She would come in carrying flowers to make her look as feminine as possible. She would wear, you know, you're back in those days, you were supposed to be in mourning for a certain amount of time, wearing nothing but black, you know, maybe even a veil, something like that, for about a year. Lizzie never did that once. She wore little corsets, you know. She had to show them that she was a feminine lady and that there was no way that a little lady could have done something like this. That's what she was going for. Let's see. Evidence was excluded that she had sought to purchase prussic acid for cleansing or cleaning a sealskin cloak from the local druggist on the day before the murders. The judge ruled that the incident was too remote in time to have any connection when she was trying to buy the poison.
Right.
So, the presiding associate justice, Justin Dewey, who had been appointed by Robinson when he was governor, delivered a lengthy summary that supported the defense as his charge to the jury before it was sent to deliberate on June 20th. After an hour and a half of deliberation, the jury acquitted Lizzie Borden of the murders. Upon exiting the courthouse, she told reporters that she was the happiest woman in the world.
Well, yeah, she just got acquitted of murder.
Yeah. And they caught her. She was caught a lot. She loved to shoplift. That was like her thing. And a lot of times, like, they wouldn't even say anything. They just write it up and send it to her dad and he'd just pay for it. So, like, she was enabled a lot. And even after she got all her money, she ended up getting like the $9 million in today's time money. She moved to the hill where she had always wanted to live. And she changed her name to Lizbeth instead of Lizzie. And she got a mansion and named it Maplecroft. And I think you can visit the mansion today. And she lived there. She was actually... She donated so much money. She was actually like a really, really good person after all this happened. And she kept to herself. And when she did the money donations, she never put down like who donated the money, because they'd probably be like, well, we don't want that since it came from you. You know what I mean?
Right.
So she would donate to hospitals, churches, schools, whatever. Anybody that needed money, she donated. She did get in trouble again for her little shoplifting habit. She had $9 million, but still decided she was going to shoplift.
Is that like a disease?
I think it's got some kind of mental thing to go with it. For her, I guess it would be, you know, because...
Of course, nobody would even think about that back then, I don't think.
No, not at all. But I'm sure it has to go with some kind of mental disorder. I've never done it. I think I did it once when I was like 4. And I took a ring because my dad wouldn't get it for me. And it broke like as soon as we got home and I cried.
I remember when one of the kids and their friends shoplifted and I made them write a research paper on why they shouldn't. Remember that?
Yep, I do. But yes, so that was Lizzie Borden, got away with murder. I'm pretty much 100% that she did it.
She was not convicted.
She was never convicted.
Just like OJ. He was not convicted.
Well, even though she was not, although, you know, she was acquitted, she always remained the prime suspect in the murders. Now, they've got some theories that they also, you know, kind of theorized that maybe Maggie killed Abby. And then I heard this theory today that Maggie could have killed Abby and Lizzie came in and, you know, she was like, I'm going to get blamed for this because everybody knows how much, you know, she hated Abby. So when her dad got there, she just killed her dad too. I feel like that's kind of a stretch. I feel like, you know, she killed Abby because of the money. She didn't want Abby to get any of the inheritance. I think that's what it was. I think she snapped because she was like, you know, we don't have water. We don't have electricity. Everybody else has it. We don't have anything. I hate it here. Why can't we do this? Why can't we do that? You know? Right. And I think there was probably some mental abuse going on there too. I'm sure her dad was terrible to her. And then you've got Abby. He's giving money to her family. And why is he giving money to her family, not letting us do this when we're his daughters? You know what I mean? So I think she probably just snapped one day. And one thing I did not mention, in the barn, Lizzie had kept some pet pigeons. She had made a little cage for them and kept the pigeons in there. And some of the neighborhood kids would come in there and try to steal them or whatever, you know, kids being kids. But the dad, Andrew, got so aggravated with this, he ended up telling Lizzie, he was like, you know what, I've had enough of this. I'm just going to go kill all the pigeons. So, and those were her pets. Like, she built the cage for him. So he, you know, went in there and killed every single one of her pigeons and came out and was like, now the problem's solved, you know?
Yeah.
So, and that happened right before the murder. So there's something else. I'm sure she's like, and then he wants to kill all my pets. And, you know, like, just adding up. And she just seems so self-involved to me that it just, it was, she did it.
Glove didn't fit though.
I know. So anyway, let's talk about the hauntings.
Oh, there's more?
Yeah, there is. We've got to get to the supernatural part. The supernatural part of it. There's not a whole lot, but there's a couple things. Now, next door to the Borden house was the home of Lizzie's great uncle, Lodwick. And Uncle Lodwick's second wife, Eliza Darling Borden, she actually brutally murdered two of their three children when she threw them down a well. Now, after she...
Who did this?
Their, I guess their aunt... that lived next door to him.
Well, I guess it does run in the family, doesn't it?
Yeah.
She convicted?
Well, no, because after she threw all her kids down the well, she went inside and slit her throat with a straight razor. So, now, to this day, it is said that the children, Eliza and Holder, haunt the Lizzie Borden house. They bring toys for the children.
Have they ever thought that maybe that... You know, they live next door to each other. What, you know, what if they were, it was a demon and they were possessed. And then the jump from the aunt into Lizzie. And then when Lizzie killed them, it jumped out of her and went to someone else.
You know, that's a really good one.
Just saying. And now the house is haunted, so.
Well, it turns out the house was haunted when Lizzie lived there.
Okay, see, there you go.
So it was a demon. She was possessed, you think?
Well, I mean, it makes sense. That's why. When maybe the demon left her after she did the killings, that's why she was so believable in court, got acquitted. She was wearing the little dress like you were saying and the little...
While she wasn't mourning because she didn't realize what happened.
Yeah,
and then after later on in life, she was such a great person, you know?
Yeah, like maybe she realized what had happened and then she was trying to do whatever she could to redeem, because ultimately she did do it, even though she was possessed, but maybe she was trying to redeem herself.
That's a good movie plot. The demon and Lizzie Borden.
Just saying.
Don't copy that. That's ours.
TM.
TM. So, yeah, people will bring toys because they can hear the children laughing upstairs. And they like to play on the second and third floor. There's a room in the house called the children's room. And I think that's where they put everything. Now, there have been reports of the electricity going off and on. Doors will open and shut on their own. There's a sensation of being touched. Now, over...
Touched how?
Huh? Not like... touch, but like touching your arm or something like that. You know what I mean? Overnight guests have reported similar activity in the attic room that was occupied by Maggie. God, Louise Holt said she's more than once arrived for work in the morning to find the prior night's occupants of that room sleeping in their cars. They couldn't cope with what was going on inside.
Okay. Now, Supernatural.
They did
Lizzie Borden, and it was a demon.
I remember her on there. I remember that. Damn it. Supernatural does everything. So.
Did you see this where Lizzie Borden's ghost stood behind somebody and they told the story about it?
Yes, I actually read that, and it was when she went, because you can go to the graveyard where she's buried. It's near the house. And she was standing there talking like they were doing the tour and staying at the bed and breakfast and stuff. And damn it. But she was doing the tour, and they were looking at the grave and everything. And she looked at the shadows that was cast, you know, because there were four people there. Except there were five people in the shadows on the ground. And one had a top bun. And she thinks it was Lizzie. So, the house's former owner spent a night in the maid's room to find that a rocking chair had been moved across the room when she fell asleep. And when she woke up, it was sitting beside the bed and it was rocking back and forth like it was watching her.
There's a whole thing about her being possessed. Let's see. Because of a family member. It was a family curse.
The Darlings.
Remember the aunt and then that?
Yeah.
Prior to her trial, let's see, other tragedies over the years. Let's see. It might not have originated in the Borden line, rather hail from her mom's side, Sarah Morse, who was Andrew's first wife.
Oh.
Could they have been dabbling in the occult? Although she's a blood relative of Lizzie, the witchcraft lineage belongs to her too.
Why has it got to be witchcraft?
Sarah, who would have been Lizzie's fifth cousin on her mom's side, was brutally murdered in 1832.
Shut up!
It was, first thought it was suicide. When she was found hanging from a tree on a farm.
Shut up.
But Sarah Cornwell worked in a river mill. It turned out she was pregnant. Suspect of the pregnancy and the murder. He was tried and acquitted. Then there's the tragic case of Eliza. Yeah, Borden, the second wife of Lodwick Borden, Lizzie's great uncle. Lived next door to Andrew Borden's home in 1872, where Eliza killed two of her three children before and brought a straight razor. Let's see. There's been several things happen in the family that could have been
a demon. Yeah, they're all saying, like...
I had no idea about that family history. I'm, like, obsessed now.
I'll send you this article.
Send that to me. That's amazing. I never came across that. I guess I wasn't looking for something like that either.
Monica.
Yeah. That's... Y'all, did y'all just hear that? You just, like, came across something. That's so cool. I mean, it's terrible for their family.
It's good to keep me around.
It's terrible for their family, but there's like another reason why Lizzie could have, and it makes sense, you know, like she was trying to repent for everything.
Yeah, the why she became good and stuff.
Or yeah,
clear the family name.
Yes, I absolutely love that. So that other relative though that got pregnant and they thought committed suicide, yeah, and she hung herself. That's,
she was murdered.
That's so sad. I hate that. Okay.
Wait, was she, or she could have been murdered.
She could have been murdered.
But she could have been the demon too. Because it was supposedly a priest that got her pregnant and killed her. So.
Oh, it was a priest?
So there you go.
Wow.
High five.
Wow. I'm impressed. You did that in like 5 seconds and it took me 2 days to do this story. That's awesome.
Well, just another spin. Well, it's just like what I always say when I try to debunk your stuff. There's always another possibility.
That's the thing though. Like me being me.
But think about it. I mean, she was acquitted. So you got to obviously think there was some evidence showing that she didn't do it. So... if she really did do it, what could have caused it?
Well, she was a prime suspect, but their thing was that she was just a little woman, so there's no way she could have done it. That was their thing. That was it.
But she could have if she was possessed.
She could have done it if she was like 4'9" and 100 pounds. The man was asleep, and she went behind her, like, or she nailed her stepmother. Like, didn't give her...
But I'm just saying.
Oh, know? Yeah, I'm just saying. Like, she should have been rotting in prison. Or, you know,
but
dead one.
If she was...
Yeah. So, maybe there was something. That's just insane. And that just... It never once crossed my mind, me, out of all people, where that's, like, the first thing I would have jumped to.
But Supernatural did that, too. So, you should have remembered that.
Well, it wasn't necessarily... how they did that, like, she was just a bad... When it showed her, she... Because I even thought of it. She was, like, a bad ghost that they kept trying to get rid of.
Gotcha, okay.
So, it wasn't, like, a demonic possession, but I think... I don't know. Y'all, sorry. We are nerding out over here over demons and stuff, and it's crazy. Wow, you just did a whole twist to that entire story.
Bum, 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 bum.
That's so cool. All right, you guys.
And I didn't mean to say debunk. I'm saying
No, no, no. Another side to the story is what you're saying. That a possibility, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Wasn't me.
Guys, I hope you enjoyed it. I'm like in shock right now. So I hope y'all listen this far to see that the whole plot twist. Y'all, it's supposed to cool down next week.
Yes.
Troy sent me a thing on it. It's going to start cooling down. I'm so excited.
And we're officially into spooky season.
Yes.
Halloween is in 31 days.
It's time to start that countdown, y'all.
Although, I did post something on Facebook. If anybody lives close to us or knows where we live and plan on going trick-or-treating, your options this year will be beef or chicken ramen. Halloween candy is super expensive this year.
Or you can get pennies.
Yeah, we can give you a shiny penny.
We can give you pennies. All right, you guys, start to layer up and stay hydrated and make good choices. And we will see you guys next Sunday.
Peace.
Bye.